Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cup podcast. I'm Chad Young, joined as always by Pete Ball. And Pete, we are deep into draft season right now. It feels like I've had a number of slow drafts, I've had a number of live drafts, just lots of stuff going on. How's the draft season playing out for you so far?
It's been fun. I joined another NFBC 50s thinking like this will hold me over until TGFBI, but the drafting has been so slow that now I'm doing both at the same time, which is kind of nice. A lot of my home leagues, my favorite leagues, they won't draft until later in the month. So nice to have everything kind of spaced out.
And we just finished up that new Dynasty League draft, that the league that Matt Heckman started. And that thing went 50 rounds. And there's 28 or 30 major league spots, and you have to take 20. Every team has to have 20 minor leaguers, and it's 14 teams. So we're going 280 prospects deep minimum. Like, that doesn't include the fact that some prospects, you know, I'm sure like Jackson Holliday is on someone's like major league roster, right? So we're going probably closer to 300 prospects deep in this one. It was a deeper dive than I'm used to, I'll say that.
Yeah. I was so busy with school and stuff that, you know, I'd be getting the messages from you and I'm like, oh my God, like normally I could just jump right in and be like, oh, I'll take Max Muncy. But by the time we got to round 42 and the top player is Bart Flemington, I have no idea what to tell you what to do. So I do appreciate you, carrying the slack there towards the end of that draft.
Yeah. Our final few picks, just to give people a sense of just how deep this went. Our final few picks, our last pick of the draft, I took Will Dion, who is a left-handed pitching prospect with the Guardians, just a guy I like. Before that, we took Yumin Lin, who is got a little bit of chatter last year with the Diamondbacks. He's not a particularly hard thrower, but he keeps getting results. And so felt like Dion is actually kind of similar. Those guys are both like not very hard throwing pitchers who don't, like, they're not rising up the boards despite the stats that suggest they should, because they just don't project as particularly effective major league pitchers. But, you know, why not? Took Khalil Watson before that. Took John Cruz of the Yankees before that. If you're not familiar with John Cruz, you're not alone. I saw some reports on him and some numbers. I was like, yeah, why not? So like that's the kind of area we are in that draft. It got deep real fast. So we'll see how those guys pan out. Maybe in a couple of years, we'll be talking about John Cruz is like, I can't believe we got him. What a steal he was in the 47th round of that 2024 draft. But anyways, we are on to episode 127, which means we're looking at jersey number 27. And Mike Trout wears 27. I feel like that's all that needs to be mentioned.
Yeah. I'm a little surprised at how close Scott Rolen is in career war to Mike Trout, but I guess a lot more seasons under the belt there. But no, this is definitively the Mike Trout episode.
Yeah. I mean, Rolen ended up playing a full 17 seasons. He wore number 27 for a little over half of those, for 10 of those years. Trout's only at 13 seasons. So in four fewer seasons, he has 15 more war. I'm going to guess he'll expand that lead over the next 4 years. Even if he keeps getting hurt, he still puts up big numbers. So yeah. And after him, I mean, it's Rolen. Carlton Fisk wasn't too far behind Rolen. Kevin Brown, Don Sutton only wore the number for a couple of years. Juan Marichal be a fun one, but yeah.
Altuve will be up there in a couple years.
He's at 49.3 and getting even into like the next guy above him for someone who wore the number for an extended period of time. There's a bunch of guys who wore it for like a year or two or something like that. But Vlad Guerrero Sr. wore it for 16 seasons. Altuve's still 10 war behind him. So he's still got a little work to do to get up to the top of this list, but maybe someday.
Yeah.
Keep dreaming, Jose. You're on your way. You can do it. But episode 127, we are going to talk about keepers based on ADP. And so what we're looking at here are, we pulled up ADP. I looked at ADP for at Fantasy Pros. Fantasy Pros, they do consensus rankings. They also do consensus ADP. And so their consensus ADP uses ESPN, CBS, Yahoo, NFBC, and RTS. I wouldn't say I used just their consensus, but I used it as a way to get a sense of like, who are some guys going within certain ranges, even across multiple platforms. And what we're looking for here are guys who at their current ADP already feel like good keepers. And when I say already feel like good keepers, what I'm trying to get away from is like, for my late pick, we went through the top 250 and then took a post 250 guy. I looked at Jordan Lawler. Then I was like, you know, it's kind of cheating. Like, everyone knows he's going higher in keeper and dynasty than he is in redraft. It makes sense. Of course, he's going to be better next year than he is this year. Like, even if he's not good, he's going to be more valuable next year than he is this year because he doesn't have a job this year. And so I was trying to avoid guys like that and instead focus on guys that I'm like looking at where they're being drafted now and thinking like, I can draft this guy now. And even if there's like a 1 round or 2 round increase in cost next year, whatever, I can already start to pencil this guy in as a keeper. And it proved more challenging than I expected to be. I thought I'd be like, oh, I'm high on this guy, I'm high on that guy. It was kind of hard to do this.
It was, especially earlier in the draft, right? Because the way we kind of chunked it out was by at least by every 50 picks. That's what I did. And those first 50 picks, like trying to find someone who could be a potential keeper for next year is obviously pretty hard to do unless, I guess, you just pick Otani, right? Because he could be worth better than a first round pick in a lot of formats. But otherwise, it's a pretty hard task earlier in the draft.
Yeah, and I looked at Otani. I considered him and then decided that if I was assuming a increase in cost, Otani may not be like, he's not going to be keeper eligible in our listener leagues, for example, because you can't keep a guy unless you have a round earlier to keep. There is no round earlier than first, and he's mostly still going in the first round. So I left him out. That makes it even harder because it takes your top 50 and cuts it down to really 38 once you get rid of the top 12. So it's a little bit of a challenge. The other thing that'll be interesting about this conversation is Pete and I have not shared our picks with each other. A lot of times we do like drafts on the show, stuff like that. And we by the time we get to the show, it's like, yeah, I know who Pete's going to talk about. He knows this is going to be blind. So there may be some cases here where we pick the same player. There may be cases here where we totally disagree.
I have one that I will eat my headphones live on the camera if you pick this player. So
that's interesting. I tried to go out of my way to pick guys that we haven't talked as much about. So like, sure. I wanted to take Cabrian Hayes. I've been talking about Hayes all offseason that like late last year, really not even just late last year, throughout last year, he started to show an ability to pull the ball and elevate the ball and pull the ball while elevating the ball that he hasn't in his career. And I was super excited about that. And I have Hayes all over the place. And I was like, I've talked about him. Let's talk about someone else. And so some of the names may not be names that you expected me to bring up, but we'll see. But let's start with, I think we should start with the early part of the draft. So Pete, we broke this down by 50s. So who is your guy currently going top 50-ish that you're like, yeah, already, if I've got this guy on my roster, I'm keeping him next year?
Yeah, so, there's no slam dunks here, but the one I went with is Tarik Skubal of the Detroit Tigers. Skubal had surgery earlier before the season started last year that caused him to miss basically up until July, and that was on his flexor strain. So there's flexor tendon. I don't know, not a doctor. I just read it on Wikipedia, whatever the case may be. He was out for a while, but when he came back, man, as everybody knows, he was absolute nails. The velocity was up essentially across the board. The slider velocity was down a little bit, but that allowed him to get a lot more separation. The swinging strike, like everything for him just kind of came to fruition. That swinging strike rate, 14.9%. That gave him a CSW of 31.3. The O swing was up over 5 percentage points from 30.4 in 2022 to 35.9. He was fooling hitters. He's hitting like, what was it, 99 or 100 miles an hour in a spring game already. Offseason, which like, is that a great thing for a guy who's already having success and has had arm issues? I don't know, but he pitches in an excellent park. He's just 27, so he might have a couple of years here of peak production. And so I was looking at this thinking like, obviously you're trying to find value if you're picking a keeper, and that's hard to do in the first five rounds of the draft, first six rounds, whatever it might be. But there's a world in which Tarek Skubal continues to do what he did when he arrived last year, and that makes him a top three starter in fantasy, and that makes him much better than his current ADP, which according to Fantasy Pros, we're looking at Tarek Skubal. Where did you go? I just had him. He's 52, 46, 53, 56. He's essentially the 50th pick across the board, ESPN, CBS, Yahoo, etc. So obviously there could be a lot of value there if he becomes a first or second rounder.
Yeah. So I was going to say, I've one question for you, one sort of quibble with the pick. The quibble with the pick is he's really only going top 50 at CBS, where he is, I think, 46th. Now, he is 49th in this sort of consensus ADP.
That's so, why I took him. Yeah.
Fine. Close enough. That's top 50. It's borderline, but I'll let you get away with this one. But here's my question for you. And it's the thing, like, there have been two things that has been talked about with Skubal quite a bit this preseason. One is he was really good last year, even in limited, 80 innings, but he was brilliant in those 80 innings. The other is, he faced Oakland twice. He faced Kansas City twice. He faced the Angels. He pitched at Miami, San Francisco. He faced the White Sox twice. Like, he had a shockingly easy schedule for the 15 starts he made. How much are you looking at that and being like, yeah, I need to discount what he did because of that? And how much are you like, who cares?
Yeah, I think you can almost can compare it to a player, a later player that I'm going to talk about, and that's Shane Bieber, where when Bieber was already great, so he had that going for him over Skubal, but in 2020, the shortened season, both Cy Youngs, Bieber and Bauer, had incredibly easy schedules. But, and then obviously after that, Shane Bieber hasn't been quite as good since he had that nice and easy schedule. I don't know. You can only put the games in your schedule. I think you look at the stuff, right? Skubal was a highly touted prospect coming up. He is objectively in a good park to pitch in, and he clearly has strikeout stuff. And that's what matters here. If he did this, with a like middling threes ERA and, throwing low 90s, and we were like, oh, that was a fun season, Tarek Skubal, that'd be one thing, but this guy's clearly disgusting. Right. And no matter who it is, it's major league batters. And you can only play the games in your schedule. He didn't just play them. He dominated them. So I think there could be value there. But everything's going to have to go right for you to keep Tarek Skubal at this price anyway.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think my comment on my reaction to the schedule comment with him is like, okay, fine. You want to knock down his stats and boost his FIP by a run from what it was, which is a pretty significant boost for just something like schedule. It goes from an FIP of 2.00 to an FIP of 3.00. Like, I don't care that much. I mean, I care, obviously. Right. That'd be a big drop versus, but like, I'm not expecting him to have a 2.00 FIP anyways. And I'm still going to be thrilled with him if he posts a 3. So yeah, I'm with you on that one. My guy that I went with in the top 50 is, I came at it from a different angle, and I went with Corey Seager. Corey Seager he's 24th in this list, but he's going 30th, 23rd, 28th, 25th, 21st. So like late second, early third round, but he's coming at a discount already because he's already hurt. And we know he's going to miss time this year. And yeah, you can say we always going to miss time. That's what Corey Seager does. But if he comes back and is healthy the rest of the way and just plays like Corey Seager, he could be a first round pick next year. He's that good. And I think he would have been a first round pick or a borderline first round pick if he were not already hurt. And so that's my thing with Corey Seager, is I feel like, and it's a thing that can happen throughout the draft, like finding those guys who are discounted because of injuries right now that you're not worried about those injuries long term. And so Seager for me is a guy who just, you look at what he's done in the past and what we know he is capable of. And if you can get him in the early third round and keep him for a second next year, like I take that pick, even if I know he's going to miss a month or whatever it is he's going to miss. I mean, I think that's a worthwhile play to make.
Yeah. I mean, look, Corey Seager is incredible. Chris Towers on FBT calls him the, I think it's Chris, the Freddie Freeman of shortstops, which is a pretty great comparison. The one hesitation I have is, and you were specific there at the end that I would agree with. If you get him for a third and you keep him for a second, that's one thing. But if you get him for a second and have to keep him for a first, I just don't see that happening because that, at least in roto leagues, that element of speed is missing. You'd be like, well, Freeman's a first rounder. You just compared him to Freeman. Freeman stole 20 bags last year. Like, Seager is not coming anywhere close to that. And there's just too many guys who have that power and speed element, especially at shortstop. But so from a pure fantasy perspective, I could see a first rounder being dicey. A second rounder, though, that's where we start to lose those guys who have speed and they're just excellent hitters. And can you count the amount of hitters better than Corey Seager on less than two hands? Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's probably a top five pure hitter in baseball. So totally with it.
Agreed. So let's jump down to now, guys, outside the top 50, but inside the top 100. Who'd you go with in this group?
Yeah, I think you're going to hate this one, but this isn't the one I was hyping up before. I'm going with Jazz Chisholm Jr. Purely from a, like, even I'm on board with, and if folks have been listening for a while, they know I've long been a big Jazz Chisholm guy. Still have him in a few of our leagues, but even I've kind of come around to the fact that, like, this guy clearly can't stay in the field. I'm going to read you his Fox Sports injuries. They're so not specific. It kind of makes it amusing. September 13th, 2023, knee injury. August 5th, 2023, hamstring. July 2nd, 2023, oblique. May 13th, 2023, toe. And we know he had surgery recently for that turf toe. April, undisclosed. April, shoulder. Then go back to June 2022, back. And we know the back injuries he had that ultimately ended his season. I mean, look, I could keep going. The guy has not been able to stay in the field, but he's just 26 years old. And so if we're talking about somebody who could potentially give you value, let's start with outfield, where outfield is looking like one of the most thin positions. And what pushes guys into the second and first round, it's being a power and speed combo. And Jazz Chisholm has power and speed. He has a ton of speed. He has a lot of raw power. So if he is able to stay in the field, which is obviously a massive if, but I mean, we're going to hear some names. I've got a feel. We've already heard two: Corey Seager, Jazz Chisholm Jr., guys who are injured a lot where the upside is there. And because they're injured a lot, that's kind of baked into their cost. So if they figure out how to stay in the field, then obviously that cost becomes a lot more appealing. So I'm going with Jazz here. Outfield's thin, power and speed combo. Let's just see if he can stay in the field for 2024. Give me 500 plate appearances at least.
Yeah, I mean, I've got Jazz in a number of leagues, so I'm on board with that. I think I'm mostly where I have him, I'm not relying on him as much as I can possibly not be reliant on him. I have him, like, one of the leagues I have him in is a dynasty league where I've had him for a couple of years. And, you know, it's one of those, like, no cost keep forever dynasty leagues. And so to be a keeper, to be a guy I hold on to in that league, all he has to do is basically, like, be a top 300 expectation. And, like, he easily crosses that bar. But I've had some trade talks about him this offseason. And in those trade talks, it's like, I'm still looking for, you know, I still want him to be treated like a top 50 dynasty type, not a top 150. And so, yeah, I like this call. I think there's a real possibility he makes a huge leap. And all it takes is being healthy. No, easier said than done. But
right.
Yeah. So I went a little, it's interesting. I looked at this a couple days ago, and I think either pulled a Skuball or things have moved, but I'm gonna justify this one by saying, even though he's number 101 of those rankings right now, he is top 100 in two of the five places we've looked, and his ADP seems to be improving by the day right now. That's Cole Reagans. And Reagans, we have talked about, I know I said I was trying to go with guys who we hadn't talked a lot about. We have talked about Reagans, so I don't want to go into a ton of depth about, you know, what he did last year, the changes he made. Like, he's been great. I think that big thing is the question for me with Reagans, and I think the reason his ADP is around 100 instead of around 50 is because everybody wondered if he could do it again, right? Can he maintain that? How much of that was just, like, you know, a ridiculous 12 start run that he went on, and, like, the ability to do it again is what matters here. He has been electric in spring training. And so that is, spring training is spring training. It's not like it's, you know, the super telling or anything like that, but it's taken away some of those doubts for me. And I think right now there, you can still get Reagans in the back half of the top 100. I think in a week that might not be possible. And if you can still do that now, I would do it, because he may be like a top 10 starting pitcher by next year.
I mean, he was a top 10 pitcher for a huge portion of last year, like you pointed out. I mean, it comes down to his control, which he started to struggle with again towards the end. But you're right, he's come out in spring training and looked amazing. The stuff is just so good. He was so dominant. A lot of people are just trying to chase strikeouts right now. He's going to give you a ton of strikeouts. I love this pick. This is the Tarik Skubal pick of the next 50, right? I mean, it is very similar. You pointed that out right at the jump. Who, small sample, absolutely dominated, tons of upside. We could see either of these pitchers becoming a top 3 to 5 starter next year. So I'm totally on board with Cole Reagans. And again, like Skubal, a great park to pitch in. Kauffman is definitely an ideal place to pitch, and in that division too. So I'm with the Reagans pick, definitely.
Yeah, and he, you know, this spring, like I said, he's been electric. He's been hitting 100 on the radar gun, which is just wonderful to see. I believe he has 2 starts and gone 5 innings total, which, you know, it's early, with like 8 strikeouts and 1 walk. That'll play. So I'm feeling pretty good about that one. So let's jump now to before we jump to the next group, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and then we'll get into the guys who are outside the top 100, but inside the top 150. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. We've gone through our top 50 and top 100 guys. We got Corey Seager from me and Tarik Skubal from Pete in the top 50. You got Cole Reagans from me and Jazz Chisholm Jr. from Pete inside the top 100. Now we're going to jump to the top 150. I wonder if we're going to keep up this starting pitcher and then a position player between us. It's a lot of pressure on you to pick the right guy here to make that happen. So who did you take inside the top 150?
So I believe I am not keeping it going here. Well, we'll see. I went with Shane Bieber.
Are, because I didn't take a pitcher here. So we're gonna have a pitcher and a hitter again. Good work.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Shane Bieber on Fantasy Pros is 142. That is really brought down by a 174 ADP on NFBC. Everybody's heard by now, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, how Bieber's velocity is back up, that he's sitting around somewhere between 93 and 94 miles an hour. And when he won that Cy Young Award back in 2020, the fastball was right around 94 miles an hour. In 2021, he started dealing with injuries. He was still really good. He had a ton of strikeouts in just a few innings. He ended up with his velocity was at 93 miles an hour. The last 2 years, the struggling, inconsistent Bieber we've seen was down around 91.5. So if the velocity is back up, I mean, it's a very simplistic way of looking at it, and maybe it's too, you know, glass half full approach. But like, I don't know. I feel like we've cooled on Bieber too quickly. He's still young. He's not like just like prime. Like he's young. He's 28 years old. He'll turn 29 this year. He's still in his 20s. I think there's a lot left in that arm. His calling card is his command. He doesn't need extreme velocity, but I think if he has good velocity, it's only going to make him better this year. So I think we need to start warming to the idea that Shane Bieber could once again be a top 15 starting pitcher. And I'll remind folks, this was a guy who was going as the number one pitcher back in 2021. Like, this is not someone who hasn't done it before. Shane Bieber has been a very good pitcher. He was a very good pitcher before 2020 when he dominated that easy schedule and won the Cy Young Award. Like, this is not out of nowhere. So if he can stay in the field and the velocity is actually back, then yeah, I could see a lot of keeper value here.
Yeah. And I also think people, like, Bieber was not great last year, right? He only made 21 starts, 128 innings, 3.80 ERA, 3.87 FIP. That's not terrible. Like, that is still a solid starting pitcher. It's just not, you know, what we had hoped for from him. From like an F4 perspective, which doesn't, you know, translate to fantasy directly, but that's a 2.1 F4. That is a solid guy, especially given he only made 21 starts, right? You got another 10 starts from someone else that might have given you another win. Great. But people, I think there's a lot of like, oh, well, you know, he's been down for a couple of years. The velocity was down 2 years ago. Right. In 2022, his velocity only averaged 91.3 on the fastball. he had a sub-3 ERA, sub-3 FIP, sub-3 XFIP in 200 innings in 2022. Like, he was a star not that long ago. Now, the strikeouts weren't up. They were down at 8.91 strikeouts per nine, which from a fantasy perspective did impact his value. But you're still looking at a guy who over the last 2 years with his decreased velocity has put up a combined 328 innings over two seasons with a 3.24 ERA and with peripherals that match that, right? That's not an outlier ERA. In his four seasons where he had the better velocity, he had a 3.29 ERA over 503 innings. That includes his rookie year where he was sort of an outlier. His ERA was really bad compared to his underlying performance. But that was a 3.05 FIP over those 4 years at the 93.2 mile per hour average over those 4 years. But over those years, he was striking out 11.33 per nine. So I'm really with you on this. I think from a draft perspective, I think he's an easy draft pick because the expectations are already too low for him. And yeah, the opportunity for him to just like, oh, his velocity's back, or even honestly, like his velocity doesn't really stick around, but he pitches like he did in 2022 at the lower velocity. He's going to be an easy keeper. So I'm a fan. I like that one a lot. The guy I went with here, as I already teased this, that we got both a hitter and a pitcher. So, you know, I went with a hitter here. I went with Jordan Walker, and Jordan Walker to me is a case where like a year ago at this time, we were talking about him as, you know, the next big thing. This guy is going to have a huge breakout season. And then he had a little bit of a slow start. He got sent down. He came back up and he was really good. And I think people missed how good he was. He finished the season with a 341 WOBA, 276 average, 16 home runs in two thirds of a season ish. He stole seven bases. So enough that you can look at like 20 to 25 home runs, 10-ish stolen bases, a high average. And that's just prorating what he did last year. He's also still just 21 years old. And I think there was a people wanted him to be a star, like a huge star. They wanted him to do what Corbin Carroll did. And instead, he was just a good player. Being just a good player at 21 is really hard and really impressive. And the fact that he then went down to the minors after the little bit of a rough start and came back and was even better, that these numbers are actually a little bit deflated by what he did before that bounce back. I think that he's due for a really good season. I think he's going to take a step forward from what he did last year. And I think he's going to be like, at some point this year, people are going to be like, oh, right. We thought this guy was the next big star and we just let Walker fall off our radar for whatever reason. His ADP is around 123. He's the 123rd on this list. Now, that is, there's some outliers in that. He is going 91st in CBS leagues and going 202nd in ESPN leagues. ESPN numbers are chaos, but he does fall into this 100 to 150 group at Yahoo, at RTS, at NFBC. Like, I think it's a pretty good estimate of where he is in that 120 to 125 range, maybe a little earlier than that. But like, yeah, I really like him. So I think that's a good opportunity to get a cheap outfield keeper for the future.
Yeah, I'm with it. You know, I think people are going to have potentially the same feeling about Anthony Volpe. His problems are a little bit different, and he wasn't. I mean, Anthony Volpe was a consensus top five prospect, so I'm not even going to say he wasn't as hyped. Both of these guys were in the same boat last year. They both put forward fine but not breathtaking seasons. They're both incredibly young, so I think there's quite a few similarities there. I do like Walker more in general. I also like that Walker has outfield eligibility, so I don't mean to continue to compare the two, but you're also right about ESPN. I think this is a good moment to bring that up. Just so folks know, when you're looking at Fantasy Pros and ESPN is so out of whack, ESPN has a very unique point system, which, I mean, hey, everyone has their own game, and if you like that, that's awesome. But their scoring is really odd, and their rankings reflect their unique scoring. So their rankings are very strange, and that affects ADP because for all of their leagues, no matter what the format, when you join a draft, it defaults to their points rankings. And so naturally the auto picks teams and even people just falling victim to accepting whatever the rankings say will take those players and bump them up. And clearly that has worked the opposite for Jordan Walker, where their rankings are so weird for him that he's outside the top 200. So if you really like Jordan Walker, go play on ESPN. You'll get a lot of shares of him.
So let's now turn our attention to guys outside the top 150, but inside the top 200. And I went back to the outfield well here. Did you go a different direction?
So this is where we both go with a hitter then. And I'm curious if it's the same one, because I also went with an outfielder. Little bit of a homer pick here. Jarren Duran is 199 on Fantasy Pros, and on ESPN he's outside the top. So he's 220, and wow, what's that third one there on Yahoo? He's 276. He can be a polarizing player for sure. Duran can, but my excitement for him comes from a couple of places. Number one, he kind of broke out last season. I mean, like he was really, really good. I'm pulling up the stats now, but we're talking both a power and a speed threat. As he was coming up, it was looking like, will he be a power hitter? He's kind of changed his approach a little bit. He changed his swing. But in just 362 plate appearances, he did give us 8 homers. So we could be looking at, if he's now leadoff for the Red Sox, we could be looking at a potential 20 homer season. He is still 27 years old, so maybe we see a little bit more power. And he stole 24 bags in those 362 plate appearances. So the other place my excitement is coming from, I just teased it there, he's projected to be the leadoff hitter for the Red Sox this season. Now, some people are really excited about the Red Sox lineup. I'm kind of middling. I think they'll be good. I think they'll be above average. I don't think they're gonna be anything amazing. But if you're telling me he's batting in front of Rafael Devers, Tristan Cassis, let's see what Tyler O'Neill can do at Fenway. He is a guy who's capable of getting on base, driving up the walk rate a little bit. And obviously he's got that speed. I'm pretty excited for Jarren Duran going forward. They're locked in with him as an everyday player. So I could see him returning a lot of value again, because of that speed component that such a premium is put on in future drafts. He could be a decent keeper there at a cost of 198 or whatever I said it was.
Yeah. I mean, he's 199th on that list, but yeah. And that, like, it looks to me like in most more sort of standard formats, he's going to be like in a 170 to 180 range, which is, it doesn't change anything that you're saying at all, because I think his upside is, you know, top 100, not top 150 or anything like that. So I think there's a real opportunity there for him to be a difference maker. And I do think he's the kind of guy, Duran is the kind of guy that I don't think we need a breakout from him for him to be a keeper at that price. I just think he's kind of undervalued there, and he'll be valued more highly next year. And so I really like that one. I looked at Duran. I considered Duran. I thought about Duran, and then I'm glad I didn't go with him, because it would have been sad for us to have the same guy. I went with a guy who was going a little bit earlier, 164th on this list, but more like 150 to 160, depending on where you're looking overall. I went with Riley Green, and the story with Green isn't super different. It's almost like a combination of the last two guys that we talked about Duran and Walker. There's the outfield element here. He doesn't have the speed that Duran has, but he does have sort of the Walker-ish, you know, 2010 type potential. But he made really nice strides last year. He was, you know, Green, we were talking about more like 2 years ago, Riley Green, as a, like, this guy's going to be the next big thing. And it didn't really come together for him in year one, more so than it didn't for Walker, right? Part of my point with Walker was that everyone was so high on Jordan Walker, and then he was good, but somehow it wasn't good enough. And so people haven't quite gotten back on the train yet. Green wasn't good in 2022. It was, you know, limited time, but still 418 plate appearances, 5 home runs, like 303 WOBA. But he came back last year in his age 22 season. And he's still young. 344 WOBA, 288 average, 11 home runs, and 7 stolen bases in just 99 games. Dealt with injury. That's a problem, and it's a concern, I suppose. But there's no real reason to think that he's, you know, going to be injury prone long term. He also brought up the fly ball rate just a small amount, but brought down the ground ball rate by a decent amount because he had a lot more line drives. His ground ball rate went from 56% to 48.9%. He brought up his barrel rate from 9.3% to 11.3%. His max EV and average EV both went up. He had a 344 WOBA, but a 363 XWOBA. He struck out less in year two, in large part because he chased less and attacked pitches in the zone more often while still making good contact. He actually made less contact, but because he was more aggressive in the zone and less aggressive out of the zone, that played for him. And probably that aggression, along with the trade-off in contact, played into why his EVs went up and things like that. Overall, I just see a guy who, like, everything is trending the right direction, and he's got this pedigree as an elite prospect that I'm really high on Riley Green this year. And I look at what he did, and it's like, if he just stays on the field this year, he's going to be an easy, easy guy to keep at a top 150 price for a outside the 150 cost.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think we should expect a little bit of natural growth there with Riley Green. I think the fact that he did post, a 796 OPS, which isn't jumping off the page or anything like that, in that tough ballpark, which isn't going to change, but in that brutal lineup, which I do think is getting better. I think he's going to be a key cog in a lineup that, let's see what Parker Meadows can do in a full season. Let's see what Kerry Carpenter can do in a full season. They brought in Mark Canna. They've got Colt Keith coming up. And Spencer Torkelson is coming off, obviously. Do I call it a breakout? I don't know. My expectations for Torkelson were kind of through the roof, but it was a very good season. So yeah. I think the Tigers are going to be a better offense this year, a much more exciting team, and he's going to be right in the heart of that. So those counting numbers should go way up, and those alone should make him a keeper for 2025.
Yeah, I think that's right, and I'm hopeful that that's how it comes together, because I've got him in a bunch of places where I would like to see him be a keeper. So let's turn our attention now to the guys outside the top 200, still inside the top 250. And Pete, again, you can go first. Who did you have here?
Yeah. So this is the one that I think might startle Chad. He might want to cover his ears for a second here, but I'm going with Byron Buxton. Minnesota Twins. So here's why. Because if folks recall, last year, Chad and I were incredibly out on Byron Buxton. And, point us, because what happened. but here's the deal. Byron Buxton's cost on Fantasy Pros is 228. And depending on what format you're playing, it doesn't matter what format you're playing in, he's going super duper late, which makes him essentially free. And it's easy to be like, well, even at free, I don't want him. But that might be a little bit of a reckless take, because when we're talking post 200, chances are, like, odds are, this is a player that you're going to drop, right? Byron Buxton's 30 years old. So he's not, we've been hearing about him forever because he's drafted right out of high school. He's not like some old guy. And his home runs per plate appearance, like his pace, he is still one of the best power hitters in the game. And he came out this spring and said, I'm going to steal 30 bases. Now, I could go upstairs and tell my wife I'm going to have a six pack by the end of April, but that doesn't mean it's going to happen, right? Byron Buxton saying he's going to stay healthy and steal 30 bases, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen, but so much of stolen bases come from intent, right? And if Byron Buxton wants to steal bases this year, I think he's going to steal bases should he be in the field. Then sprinkle in one of the reasons why he's going so late, other than the obvious that he's hurt all the time, is that he's util only. I think that might change. I think that's going to change pretty early in the season. He's going to gain outfield eligibility. So he's going from a player who I wanted nothing to do with inside the top 100, who I'm very interested in outside the top 200. He's free. So is it possible that Byron Buxton puts forward 450 plate appearances, which would be like some kind of world record for him, hits 30 homers and steals 20 bags in just that amount of time, and becomes once again a top 100 player? Yeah. And you know what? If he does, you have him at a great cost. Keep him or trade him if you're that worried about it. But right now he's free. He doesn't hurt you.
Yeah. I'm totally with you on Buxton. The price has dropped far enough that I'm also back in. I'll be honest. I don't think he's going to steal very many bases. I know he's saying he wants to, but I still think his value to that team is so high that if they think it's going to impact his availability, like they will glue him to first base if they need to, if they think that's going to keep him on the field.
Pinch run every time he gets on.
Yeah. I do think there is also a possibility that the Twins have reached a point with him where they're like, look, we've told him not to run. We kept him out of the field. He got hurt anyways. So forget it. Just let him do whatever he wants. And like, cause the reality is if you're going to, you know, the thinking of like, okay, we're going to keep him at DH. We're not going to let him steal bases is like, all right, we'll take away 25, 30% of his value in order to get him on the field 120 games instead of 30 games. But if you're still going to like, if you're going to get 60% of the player for the same number of games anyways, then just put him in the field and let him do his thing. And like, whatever, he's going to get hurt in the field, get hurt hitting, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. But at least you're getting full value from him when he's out there. So it is possible they say like, look, you're going to get hurt no matter what. You might as well steal bases while you're there. I expect that what they're going to do is say, we're putting you back in the field. We know you like playing the field. You're so valuable to us as a center fielder, but we need to find ways to try to limit your risk as best we can. But yeah, I'm with you. I think it's with Buxton. The thing that both of us said last year was there was no upside. He was either going to be healthy and you were going to get what you paid for, or he wasn't going to be healthy and you were going to lose out. This year it's flipped, right? If you get 60 games of legit Buxton, you're going to be pretty happy at this draft cost. Now the risk with Buxton, I think, and I say it's without cost. The risk here is he also wasn't good last year. And so there is a risk that you get, you know, what actually happened last year, right? If you go back and look at his 23 season, it's not just that he played his regular, you know, minimal number of games. He got in 85 games last year, which like that's basically what he's done. 85 last year, 92 the year before, 61 in 2021, 39 in 2020, which remember 20 shortened season, but still he was on pace for like 90. Like that's just sort of what he does, is play around 90 games. The problem last year was he played 90 games and had a 207 average, a 311 WOBA. He did manage to hit 17 home runs in 85 games, which to your point is like, maybe he'll still hit a bunch of home runs, because he was on pace last year. He played a full season. He was going to go 30-15.
Mm-hmm.
No. And that was with him really not hitting very well. So I do think there's some risk here that you're getting, Joey Gallo with some speed, right? And that is where the downside exists with Buxton. But at this price, you can take that risk. You can say like, hey, if he's back in form and I don't get much time out of him, he'll still be valuable at this pick if I get 80 games of him. And then there's the possibility that like he claims the knee stuff's behind him. If Buxton is right and the knee stuff is behind him, yeah, he's not just an easy keeper. Then he's like, you're going to talk about paying a top 200 or top 250 price for a guy who's a top 50 player if he's actually healthy. I'm dubious that's what's going to happen, but I really like the idea of like, yeah, even if he's moderately healthy, if he stays on the field, if he can play 100 games, 120 games, he could very well play his way into being a keeper if it looks like it's a sustainable 100, 120 games. Like if they're like, okay, we figured out that we can like rest him the right amount and blah, 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 blah. And like, this is going to work. There's a real clear path forward here and a real opportunity to profit that just didn't exist last year at his cost. So the guy I went with outside the top 200, inside the top 250 is a guy who right now, I think his price is a little bit deflated because I think he may be banged up. Now I can't remember. I'll check the news. But the bigger thing is he's currently not the closer for the Los Angeles Angels. We've been told very clearly that Carlos Estevez is the closer.
I almost
Robert Stevenson is the best pitcher in that bullpen. He's probably the best pitcher on that team. Unless there's someone I'm missing.
Maybe Detmers, if he ever figures it out. But
maybe. And I like Detmers. But Stevenson, like, this to me feels like draft him in at 220 or whatever it is he's going at. He's 221 on this ADP sheet at Fantasy Pros. the low on there, like the min pick on there is 192 at ESPN. The max is 289 in NFBC. So, you know, 250-ish, something like that, maybe a little bit better. Most of the places he's above 250, which is why an average he is, which is why I picked him. But you might be able to get him in like 210, 215, 220, something like that. And if he take, like, this year, he may only be the closer for like July, August, September, maybe not even that. And he may not get you very many saves, and that may limit his value this year. And that probably makes in redraft his value fine. I think that, like, that's fine. He's going to be a closer next year, right? Like, I fully believe he will either have the job there or will have been traded somewhere. Like, he is too good. And when he displays that what he learned last year has stuck, he's going to end up as a closer. And then you're talking about a guy who, like, is he going to go, like, I'm looking at this list right now. The 79th and 80th names on this list are Jordan Romano and Raisel Iglesias. If they had come out and instead of saying Stevenson might be a closer, they said he is a closer. Is he going as high as they are? Probably not. Like, he still isn't as proven as those guys are. By this time next year, is he as proven as those guys are? Yeah, I think he is. And so all of a sudden you're talking about a guy who you're taking outside the top 200, who could be a top 75 pick if in fact he is the closer, and I think he will be. So I really like Stevenson there. I think he's an easy opportunity to get saves. And I mean, I hate paying for saves. And so the ability to get a guy cheap this year and keep him next year still cheap and get those saves is just such a benefit. So,
yeah, and that's a benefit that can't go understated in keeper leagues. I mean, the leagues where I've got Andres Munoz for a last round pick, because obviously he didn't start the year as the closer, but became the closer. So he was a free agent ad, making him a free keep. Yeah, that's huge. So if you can get Stevenson for a price close to that, because I'd push it even further. I'd be surprised if Carlos Estevez is able to hold on to that closer's role for the entire season. I don't think they bring in Stevenson if they thought he could. Stevenson, if you filter strikeouts per nine for a minimum, and filter it so it's just pitchers at a minimum inning pitch of 40, he's in the top 10. He had a better K9 last year than Tyler Glasnow, who we know is second among starters however low you have to lower that threshold to get Glasnow on there. But he's right in there. He was absolutely nasty last season. I think he's going to get that closer role. He did say, for what it's worth, he's going to get in games this spring. He's confident he will. He's just not sure it's going to be enough to be ready for opening day, but he is a reliever, so I can't imagine it's going to take him very. It sounds like right now, if I had to put money on it, second week of the season.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So let's now go to guys outside the top 250, and this is just sort of like open ended. Anybody outside the top 250, Pete, who are you going to take?
Yeah, so I mean, if I told you that there was a player who is only 26 years old, has a pretty significant prospect pedigree, and is going to be batting in front of three of the 10 best hitters in all of baseball, you would probably say there's no way that guy's going outside of the top 250. But that is exactly where Gavin Lux is going. Now, Gavin Lux last season obviously missed the entire season with, he tore his ACL in the spring, I think it was. I can't recall. But before he did that, it was draft season, obviously, and he was getting a lot of hype because he had gone to, please correct me if I'm wrong, Chad, but I thought he went to Driveline. And they were saying that he added significant speed to his swing. It was impacting the ball a lot harder. And again, this wasn't some out of nowhere player. Gavin Lux was, when he got called up, I believe consensus top 10, maybe even top 5 prospect. I remember his debut. I think it was against the Rockies. It's a lot of hype there. And still just 26. He's now back. He's healthy. And let's see what he learned that offseason that we didn't get to see last season. Right now, Roster Resource has him in a platoon batting ninth for the Dodgers. If you're going to bat ninth for a team, bat ninth for the Dodgers, because Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, and Shohei Ohtani will be coming up behind him. And he is the strong side of that platoon for what it's worth. And I'm not so confident it's going to be a platoon. I think the Dodgers have every hope that Gavin Lux is just going to come back, seize that job, and show all the growth that we were hoping to see last season. So on Fantasy Pros, Lux is... he's down there at 284. 284 on one. He's going 416 on Yahoo. Go get Gavin Lux, because I think there could be some. I'm not saying he's going to be some top 50 player just because he had prospect pedigree, but I'd be surprised if he doesn't have positive value going into 2025 based on where you took him this draft season.
So I think we found the first moment in this episode where I'm gonna disagree with this one. I get what you're saying about there's like the cost is so low and I see the upside. He's had 1,003 career plate appearances. It's not a tiny sample. It's not a huge sample, right? It's not like the book is not written on Gavin Lux by any means. But he's got 1,003 career plate appearances, and he's not good. He hasn't been good. And I don't think he's going to be good. I think he's just not a very good hitter. And I think we have enough data now that barring some new evidence from something, barring some new evidence coming out of his performance in spring training, I'm very skeptical. His career barrel rate is 5.3%. His max EV is under 110. His average EVs are under 99. Like, there's nothing in his major league career that I'm excited about. The pedigree exists. It is possible that these made changes, but I'm out on Lux. I don't know if there's any pick at which I'm really excited about taking him. I think there's enough guys with upside. Like, I'd rather take Jordan Lawler and sit on Lawler until the Diamondbacks give him a shot than take Lux.
If I could pick Lawler for this activity, I probably would.
Yeah.
I would say
I'm saying even for this year, though. I'm saying forget the keeper value. I'm saying for this year, I would rather wait to see when Lawler gets a job than have Lux.
Yeah, I don't know if I disagree with that.
Okay.
But I'd push back. I mean, if you want to judge him based on his ages 21 through 23, that's fine. But his age 24 season, that was a WRC plus of 114. We saw him cut the strikeout rate down to 20.2, where when he debuted, it was up at 29.3%. So, like, I don't think there was a lack of progress. I think it was identifiable. And then again, there was a lot of excitement about those changes that he made, especially with the exit velocities, which he needed to see improvement on. So if those are there, he continues to hack away at that strikeout rate, or even if he just lives at that 21% that he was at pretty much between 2021 and 2022, I don't know. I think we could see a pretty useful player there. It's just, are the counting stats going to be there if he's batting that low in the lineup? Because sure, the Dodgers are going to bat around enough, and he does have elite names behind him. He's still batting ninth. He's free. So
here's my counter to the progress thing here is his age 21 and 22 seasons, he got a total of 151 plate appearances. Like, those are not actually influencing his career numbers very much at all because it's such a small number. His 2021 and 2022 seasons, Lux put up very similar plate discipline numbers. There was some improvement in his strikeout rate from 21 to 22, but his career strikeout rate is 22%. His career walk rate is 10.1%. If he repeats what he did in 2022, that's not a whole lot better than what he's been doing for his career overall.
But those numbers are also not bad. Those are good numbers.
They're fine.
And now but add that with getting older and stronger and ideally took something from Driveline. I mean, like, those are good plate discipline numbers. Double-digit walk rate?
I don't know that I believe that he's gotten older and stronger so much as he's dealt with injuries that may have made him less than he was. And so we'll have to see. The one other comment I want to make quickly is, and there's a possibility this is rust or any number of other things, but he's been very, very bad defensively so far in spring training. Now, it is spring training. It is like three plays or something like that. But like, it was something like he had at one point had two ground balls and had made errors on both of them. It is not some meaningful thing, but I do think it's something to watch because I don't think I don't believe his offense is good enough that if he isn't playing very good defensive shortstop, the Dodgers are going to wait on him. If
before
he
injury,
has to do one
he had
of the
pretty
two
good
things.
Range versatility, so
yeah,
hopefully see. That's not a thing. That would be a shame.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see. And they honestly, like, Miguel Rojas is or maybe Chris Taylor are the other options. Like, it's not like they've got like great choices to replace him. I think he probably has plenty of leeway here. So yeah, I'm I don't think he's going to lose his job anytime soon, but I think there's more risk around him than people realize. And I think his track record of being not good is longer than people realize. And so I'm lower than most on Lux. That's sort of where I am. My guy outside the top 250 is, this is a case where I'm probably reaching a little bit by going with an injured player. But Drew Rasmussen at, he's 467th off the board, according to ADP over, or according to Fantasy Pros overall. He's a good pitcher. That's sort of what it comes down to. Now, the warts with him are mostly going to be like inning count, Tampa Bay related stuff. And you do have to, like, he has gotten, you know, he threw 76 innings, half of which or something was in relief in 2021. And then he made 28 starts in 2022. And then he only can make 8 starts the next year. Like, it's not like he's thrown a ton of innings. And so you, even next year, you can't assume you're going to get much out of him in terms of, at least you can't assume you're going to get, you know, 150, 200 innings. You can get 100, 120, something like that. But I think you can get 120 elite innings out of him. And he is quite literally free. Like, if you're in a 12 team league drafting 30 players, he's literally available to you whenever you want. And you can take him with your last pick. You can stash him on the IL as soon as that's a thing you're able to do in your league. And you'll have him late this year and be able to keep him for free next year. And have a guy, I think, that at least for 100, 120 innings next year, you can slot in right near the top of your rotation.
Yeah. So I'm always going to be in on free pitchers. Is this his third Tommy John surgery, or is this two Tommy Johns and internal brace?
I'm not sure.
I'm trying to, so what I've got up right now is the right-hander will soon undergo a hybrid internal brace procedure, the third major surgery on his right elbow. So whatever it is, that obviously has me a little terrified. Yeah. Like this isn't like, you know, years past where it was Sale or it was Severino or those other guys, Glasnow most recently, who had the surgery. And so it's like, go get him late in your keeper drafts. This guy, I hope he comes back, but three surgeries on his elbow, that's going to be tough. And then it's the Rays. I'm biased. You know, I can't stand the freaking Rays when it comes to fantasy. And yet I still end up with them all the time. So I wouldn't be surprised if they put him on a plan of like, all right, he's going to pitch 5 innings in 2024, and then he'll pitch 10 innings in 2025. And then we'll see if we can get him up to 15 for 2026. But jokes aside, he's obviously super talented. Just that story alone, third major surgery on his elbow. I want to see him come back. Let's see it, man. Just take the mound would be awesome for that.
That's totally fair. And I do think there is a lot more risk with him than I think with the other guys we've talked about, but that's also why his cost is so low.
Yeah. So there's no risk with that cost. I mean,
yeah,
it's nothing. Especially if you have IL spots, you got IL spots, draft him, throw him on there. Forget about it.
Totally agree. So we've now gone through, what was that, 12 players? Was that 6 players each? Yeah. 6 players each. Top 50, top 100, top 150, top 200, top 250, and someone later that we think are long-term keeper options, guys that you can get at their ADP right now, feel really good about keeping for next year. Pete, anything else? Any spring training storylines you want to talk about quickly? Anything jumping out at you?
Well, the Red Sox are apparently texting Jordan Montgomery all the time, which, like, given the last few targets we've been interested in, I'll believe it when I see it. Not sure I'm that enthusiastic about it, but I guess my big point there is I'm not that interested in spring training, though Wyatt Langford looks incredible. These guys need a sign. The current Cy Young is not signed. The Jordan Montgomery postseason hero has not signed. JD Martinez is in the twilight of his career and just put forward a monster season, has not signed. That sucks. Like, let's get it together. Let's get these guys on team so we can see them to start the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think especially with the pitchers, like we talked about it last episode, it's even more true now. Like, I don't know how we can assume that Montgomery or Snell are ready for opening day.
No chance, right? Like, right. Almost, unless they sign like tomorrow, I'd be shocked.
I think they'd have to sign tomorrow and have been like aggressively working out somewhere with like a former major league pitching coach who knows how to get them ready. But like, they haven't faced hitters. Like, it's just, yeah, I don't know. I'm not thrilled about that. I think that there's a couple of guys who are just like, you know, Langford is killing the ball, which is super fun. A name that I think is worth considering for fantasy that, I don't know, maybe he should have been one of our guys we talked about here, but Andy, I think it's spelled Pages, but I think it's Paez. I think it's pronounced Paez.
Oh, wow.
Of the Dodgers is, he's killing the ball this spring. And he was a pretty highly touted prospect in his own right before he had, a shoulder issue last year. I'm pretty intrigued. And like, you know, you look at the Dodgers and I mean, Outman is probably pretty safe in center field, but he wasn't great with the bat at all times last year. Jason Hayward is their starting right fielder. Teoscar Hernandez should be fine in left, I think. I think there's some room between Outman and Hayward for a guy like Paez to take some plate appearances. And like right now, if you look at their bench, it's, you know, Miguel Rojas, Chris Taylor, and Kike Hernandez. Like he could displace one of those guys to become sort of the true fourth outfielder on that team. And get pretty regular plate appearances. I also don't know, I don't know what the plan is with Shohei Ohtani in terms of like, are they thinking they're going to get 160 games at DH out of him? Or are they thinking like he's working his way back from injury? We're going to give him a day off every now and then, and he'll get us 145, 150, 100, you know, something like that, which isn't a ton, but it's not like a bunch of time off. I'm not saying they're going to like sit Ohtani twice a week or something like that. I expect him to play him almost every day, but I also think they're going to like give him some time off here and there to stay fresh. And that does open up, you know, that maybe opens up another 10 games for a guy like Teoscar to DH and Paez to step in left field, where if you think Teoscar is going to miss 15 games, again, just maybe for time off, stuff like that, Hayward's going to miss some time, again, just for time off. I'm not even talking injuries here. I'm just talking like time off. You could carve out a meaningful role for a guy like Paez, and he's a much more intriguing option to be that fourth outfielder than Taylor or Kike. He doesn't bring the flexibility they do of playing the infield, but they don't necessarily need that flexibility from both those guys, especially if Rojas is the other guy on the bench. So I think he's worth watching.
And even that at this point feels like worst case scenario, because best case is he's traded for,
yeah,
insert random closer and is starting opening day. So, I mean, I don't find that likely, but that is a potential scenario. They were already rumored to be interested in Kenley Jansen. I'm not saying the Red Sox would trade for him, but, you know, they could be in the market for something, and Paez is going to be one of the first names to be brought up.
Yeah, especially the way he's hitting right now, right? Everyone's going to be like, oh, got a guy who's like major league ready, tearing the cover off the ball at the moment. That's going to be intriguing for people. So anyways, just a couple quick storylines following up on our keeper values by ADP. We are now into our regular season schedule, which means we're going to be back with you next week instead of you having to wait 2 weeks. I don't know if you guys think that's a good thing or a bad thing, but you're going to hear from us more often. So I hope you're happy about that. We're happy about it. So yeah, I hope you have a good week. Enjoy some spring training baseball, and we'll be back with you next Tuesday. We're going to be on Tuesdays now. So we'll be back with you next Tuesday.